to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It is the start of a brand new week here, and we're just playing with all kinds of new equipment, trying to keep things going here. Here's our situation. There's so much going on. Over the weekend, we had a lot of stuff left over. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here. We've got a guest about ready to come on here. We're going to be talking about the economy because, you know, the economy is really this, it's just getting completely unbelievable out there. We're seeing the Dow keeps going up. We're seeing these record profits by the by Goldman Sachs and these various financial firms, and it's just rather amazing to see this happening at the same time that we've got record unemployment, foreclosures, all the rest. There is something really seriously out of whack. We ran some stories last week where Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, all this money they've got to pay bonuses with is the money that was given to them from the taxpayers. They haven't actually done anything other than loot the general public, declare it to be profits, do some creative bookkeeping to make the numbers bigger, and pay themselves bonuses. And it's just, it doesn't pass the smell test. I know earlier today I was watching MSNBC. I'm going to start blowing the whistle on some of these people. And MSNBC was trying as hard as they could to convince people that the Goldman Sachs bonuses were a good thing and prove the economy is on a rebound. And if, you know, the implication is obvious. If you're out of work and you've lost your home and you've lost your business, well then, by golly, that's just your own problem and we don't know what's wrong with you, but we've all got money, therefore the economy must be doing well. And it's another scam. It's another cover-up. They don't want you to understand how bad things are. They don't want you to understand that the government screwed it all up, because otherwise you'll be coming after them with the pitchforks and the rope and the torches and all the rest of that. Anyway, without further ado, would like to go to the phones and say hello to our guest Robert Singer, who's an article writer. He's written quite a few articles on the economy, unemployment, so forth and so on, and we've linked quite a few of them from whatreallyhappened.com. So Robert, aloha, thank you for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you. Great to be on your show.
Well, thank you very much. Listen, the reason I wanted to have you on the show here was basically to get your input on what I was just saying. The corporate media is constantly telling us that, wow, the economy is doing great because Goldman Sachs is paying record bonuses. Bank of America is paying record bonuses. If they're doing fine, then the economy must be healthy. And yet, looking around with our own eyes, the reality is we're in a full-bore depression right now with no sign of relief on the horizon for ordinary Americans. What is your take on this very obvious dichotomy?
Well, Mike,
yes.
Claim that Goldman Sachs story is disinformation. I claim they want you to believe they're evil and they're stealing our money and they're paying each other bonuses.
Okay.
I claim that's their goal. It's so outrageous. What else could it be? I mean, it's so in your face. And it's on every media there is. The underground, the above ground, the progressive, the non-progressive, the regressive, the mainstream media, KPFK, Pacifica, everybody has the same story. Goldman Sachs is stealing our money. Well, first of all, that isn't even true because it isn't our money. We live in a debt-based monetary system. All that money came from the Federal Reserve. They created out of thin air. How is that our money?
But it's on our tab, though, is the basic idea.
Yeah. We owe $11 trillion to the Federal Reserve. Are we ever going to pay it?
They're going to try and make us pay it. That's the
with
whole
what?
Point.
The only way we could pay it is with money they create.
Which they use to basically extract taxes. In other words, work product. The Federal Reserve will print the money on paper, on ink, for virtually no cost. But we, the American people, are not allowed to do the same. So when we, the American people, have to pay that money back as taxes, we're basically paying it in full work product. It is a means to basically extract
labor
from
us. Where do we get
the
money to pay the back?
We have to work in order to have them give us the money to then pay.
Where do we get the job, Mike? Where do we get the job to work for the money? They created it. If you go back to 1910, before the Federal Reserve was created, the men behind the Federal Reserve, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Loeb, Morgan, Lee, Schiff, owned or controlled 1/6 of the world's wealth. I'm talking not fiat money, not monopoly money. I'm talking about gold, silver, nickel, steel, iron, timber, resources. Where is that wealth today?
Okay, but we wandered off the subject.
No, hang on. We're on the point, Mike. Trust me, we're on the point. Where's that wealth today? The richest people in the world. By the way, John D. Rockefeller, one of the members of the Federal Reserve, wasn't the richest man in the United States. He wasn't the richest man in the world. He was the richest man in 1910 in history.
Mm-hmm.
He did not rip up the streetcar tracks in 1930 to make more money selling oil. But let's just back up. Where is there real wealth today? The nickel, iron, steel, timber, gold, silver. Where is that wealth that they had in 1910 today?
The answer is
it's in our consumer society. It's in the airplanes, the cars, the streetcars, the houses,
and the landfills,
office buildings, the
and
freeways.
The
That's their wealth, Mike. What do they have today in place of that wealth? $500 trillion of the monopoly money they printed. They got a bunch of monopoly money. They exchanged gold and silver, nickel, steel, iron, timber for monopoly money. How do you get
wealth?
Now,
wait a minute. You just
that.
Got done saying they just printed up out of thin air. Now you just contradicted yourself.
That's right. They printed out of thin air to use up their own resources, Mike. That's my point.
Okay, but here's...
They had real wealth in 1910, and now all they have is paper money. Why would they do that?
Okay. Robert, when you and I first communicated ahead of, our little interview here, okay, we set a couple of ground rules here that I wanted to talk about unemployment and not go off on a rent. Now, hang on, this idea that that Goldman Sachs wants us to think they're screwing the public. First of all, not everybody was covering the story. It began here on the blogosphere. Oh. The rest of the media are picking it up now rather than risk being seen as not covering it. It's like the same thing that we did with the situation with, when we had the Downing Street memo, where it was covered on the internet for a month before the corporate media picked it up. Okay,
Why would they want to? Well, I'm actually going to answer that if you let me, but it won't make any sense unless we accept the fact that the richest people in America in 1910 now have nothing but a bunch of monopoly money.
Now, the point I'm trying to make is, okay, you can't come on here and say that Goldman Sachs wants to be seen as the bad guy. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, as a matter of fact, AIG, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, it's in the news constantly that they've stolen our money, they took our taxpayers' money.
Well, they very well can't say that they didn't. They very well can't deny that that's exactly what happened.
They got that out there on purpose to get disinformation.
Why? Why? You keep saying that. You keep saying that, but you don't back it up with any proof.
Well, actually,
okay, it doesn't make any sense.
The media is controlled.
The basic thing is, what does it serve? What is the agenda? What is the agenda? Why are they doing it? How does it possibly help them? Okay, all right. The point I'm making here is very simple, all right? The blogosphere went out there with this story, and we led with it the idea that if you looked at the mathematics of Goldman Sachs' sudden profitability, that it just didn't make any sense for them to be reaping such huge profits at a time when the rest of America was in serious, serious trouble. This idea that this is somehow something that they intended to have happen doesn't make any sense. What does it get them? More animosity? More resistance from the American people? More political opposition? I don't think so. It doesn't make any sense. What we're seeing is the looting of the nation before it all comes apart. And this idea that this is what Goldman Sachs wants and Bank of America wants, to be thought of as supervillains right now, doesn't make any sense at all, because it's shortening the time before the collapse. All right. Robert, we're going to have to agree to disagree. We're going to take a break and be back with the news and stuff in about after these words from our sponsors.
Yeah. Canadian Public Radio.
But this country is coming to, I sure would like to know, if they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show there. And I'm sorry that first segment got a little out of control, but... You know, I do insist that we all get to take turns, and I get to ask questions and have them answered. And this idea that Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and the rest of these financial institutions are somehow still doing a good job for the economy, but only want to be seen as villains, it's completely ludicrous. It is the most ridiculous thing I've heard ever since the no plane at the Pentagon story. It just doesn't make any sense. Because that kind of reputation has to work against them in business. It's certainly working against them politically. It is just ridiculous. And when my guest decides that he's going to try and overrule me on the air, well, then I'm sorry. We're going to move on here. Now then, so getting back to the situation, the premise of the reason I wanted to have this gentleman on there, because initially it seemed like he had something of value to contribute, we have this incredible dichotomy. We are seeing the death of manufacturing across the country. Agriculture is failing. The spring wheat forecasts are down. We're going to start seeing wheat shortages, flour shortages this next spring. We may actually see major hunger come to the United States this next spring because the wheat forecast is down. Why? Because farmlands that used to grow wheat were diverted for ethanol production in this harebrained scheme that we could grow fuel for our cars, which wound up wrecking the car fuel systems. So we've got a farmland shortage. Then a lot of our other usable farmlands were destroyed by all the flooding because the government had abandoned maintenance on the levees and flood control system and wiped out vast areas of usable farmland. They're all covered with Mississippi silt now. It's going to be a long time before the rain washes it away to where you can grow a good crop on that again. And finally, these genetically modified crops that were supposed to be the salvation of a starving world are actually producing lower yields than their natural counterparts. So we've got some serious, serious issues coming up with our agriculture, with our manufacturing. It's a terrible situation. Look around. I mean, California may just outright fail. They just went through that whole situation where they raised taxes against the will of the voters. They cut spending to the absolute bone, and they're still not going to make it because they misestimated the drop in tax revenues. And that is a consistent problem all across the country. Governments still think that there is a vast pool of untapped money out here in the general population, and if they can just figure some way to get us to spend it, the economy will come back. And it just isn't going to work. So when you don't have manufacturing, when you don't have a lot of retail, when you don't have agriculture, when you don't have any of that stuff going on in the country, and tax revenues are falling, and that is the real measure of the economy. Tax revenues are off. Between 13 and 20% at the state level, up to 44% at the federal level, that's the true measure of the decline in the economy. And yet, these Wall Street firms who are a buddy-buddy with Congress got billions and trillions of your dollars. And yes, the Federal Reserve created them out of thin air, but you are on the hook to repay it. Somewhere down the road, not in printed-up money, but in actual work product. That's the deal. Robert was correct on one thing. Ours is an economy based on debt. The government is pushing you deeper and deeper into debt without your permission to reinflate the economy. So let's take a closer look at Goldman Sachs. How did Goldman Sachs pull off this miracle? A year ago, they were on the edge of collapse. And they get a whole bunch of money from the United States government. Now, since the repeal of Glass-Steagall in 1999, brokerage companies and banks can be the same company. They can meddle in each other's business. So Goldman Sachs simply turned around, took the cash insertion from the U.S. government. Remember when TARP was sold, we're going to buy up the toxic assets, and then as soon as it was passed, they said, no, we've changed our mind. We're going to do direct capital injections. So they injected capital into Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs turns that around, and using the reserve requirement takes that money and lends it back to themselves at a ratio of some 30 paper dollars, newly created dollars, for every one that came in the capital injection. It's still technically by the rules. It's still, you know, very legal, according to the rules they just made up. Then Goldman Sachs goes out and they start buying up all these depressed assets at fire sale prices, stuff that's going broke, stuff that is being sold for pennies on the dollar, and they load up on it. Then the U.S. government takes $27 trillion, and they've put it out there into the market to reinflate the worth of those assets, to buoy them back up again. And what happens? The assets Goldman Sachs are holding that they bought with your tax money swell up and become hugely profitable overnight. Goldman Sachs got seed money from the taxpayer, and then the government used the taxpayer money to inflate the assets Goldman Sachs is holding. How can you not have record profits with a scam like that? Did Goldman Sachs do anything of value for that money? No. Did they add anything of value back to the society? No, they did not. It's gaming the system, and they deserve their reputation as villain. And obviously, this is the latest attempt to propagandize their way out of this very bad public relations nightmare they've created. But this suggestion that they're actually providing a useful service to the economy as a whole, and they only want to look like they're crooks, is nonsense. It is complete nonsense. We're going to go to the phone. Scott in Wisconsin. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind tonight?
Hey, Mike. I just want a couple things to discuss with you. I'll be your guest, brother.
Okay.
Hey, number one, this gentleman, and I don't want to throw darts, but this gentleman and these guys out born in a fairy market, they remind me of ears full of 2 miles of earwax in their ears. And they remind me of those horses that race down the track with their blinder on their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all a puppet game. Remember last week, you think these people would learn to wake up. Last week, the stock market went up because Citibank and Goldman Sachs made a profit.
Yes,
that's
right.
And then we go on the other side of the scale, and we see that Bank of America, $2.24 billion loss with GE.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you explain that? Everything's going real good. You're exactly right, Mike. These blind fools, we'll call them, are trying to just totally, along with our man at the helter, trying to just not only pound us on the ground, but just stomp our heads into the ground, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, basically, that's it. You know, I am convinced that our economy and our government cannot survive much longer. And basically, we're in the stage of our history where they're simply going to loot the nation and grab as much as they can and get it in their pockets. And as soon as things fall apart, they're going to skedaddle for the border, and they're going to leave we, the American people, whose blood, sweat, and tears built this nation over the last 200 years, they're going to leave us with this empty husk, this dead carcass that's already been picked clean to the bones. That's what's going on right now. And this propaganda and this spin that's coming out is just an attempt to keep we the people from getting angry and tarring and feathering the crooks before they have a chance to escape. Scott, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network. Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Let's heading back to the economy here and just take a closer look at California. As I was mentioning to the previous caller, California may well be setting the precedent for the rest of the country. California is in deep doo-doo. Their economy is in the Al-Qaeda. And I'll bet right now, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is wishing he hadn't been quite so quick to write off all those billions of dollars that Enron owed California after his good buddy Ken Lay made him the governor. But the situation is, and this is where they're really failing, and we're seeing this all across the country. Everybody has fallen in love with this idea of a jobless economy. Somebody has created this idea that you can revive the economy through creative taxation or creative bookkeeping or gaming the system, and we don't have to worry about bringing back the high-paying jobs. It is the most ridiculous thing to come down the pike in a long time, ever since the so-called service economy back in the 1980s, that they floated in order to cover the fact that we were already even then starting to lose our manufacturing capacity. We don't need to manufacture tractors and TVs. We'll get rich doing each other's laundry for a fee. Yes, that was the thought. And it worked from the point of view of the government, because when you got people into doing services for each other for a fee, you increased the opportunities for taxation. But all that was happening was money was being moved briskly from the private to the government purse. But no, very little real new wealth was coming into the country because we didn't have exports. We had a lot of importing. We had a huge trade imbalance. It's been going on for $1.5 billion a day for years. It's a huge, huge problem. And there was no way we're going to survive that. And government, rather than deal with that trade imbalance and say, you know, we got to make something other people want to buy, they just kicked back and said, nah, we don't need to manufacture. We can just take the money and run it around in circles real fast, and it will grow all by itself through the magic of the printing presses over at the Federal Reserve. And so they've been gaming the system to justify printing up more money to go in their pocket at your eventual expense. Because somewhere down the road, they are thinking they are going to tax you for all this money plus accruing interest to balance the books. Otherwise, they'd be in a hyperinflationary spiral by now, which we're kind of heading into anyway if you look at your store prices. So California, and here's the problem. California, after this huge fiscal crisis, they set up this budget. They raised taxes against the will of the voters. They cut all kinds of government programs and spending and said, okay, problem over, only it is not so. Because they underestimated the continuing decline in jobs, they just let a bunch of state people go. Those tax revenues are no longer part of the equation. I don't know if that's the mistake they made, but they made a mistake somewhere. Because now they're coming up billions of dollars short again in the state budget. They're going to go bankrupt. They're going to go broke. California and then other states are going to follow along. Here's the reason. We've all had our jobs taken away from us. It's an absolute disaster. The U.S. government got lobbied by corporations to pass tax breaks that made it financially attractive to move high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries. And a lot of Americans have left to follow those jobs. But the bottom line is, and you know, we've got this brain drain going on in this country, where some of our best and sharpest manufacturing minds have already left. And so now we're here, and we've got people with master's degrees and PhDs trying to get gardening work. That's how bad the situation is out there. And in our economy, consumer spending traditionally has accounted for about 70% of the entire economy. So we just had 70% of the economy get kneecapped. They're making about maybe 60% of what they were making 2 years ago. And yet, the conventional wisdom is there's a jobless recovery on the horizon because, after all, J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs are doing really well. Therefore, the economy must be working. That's what they're trying to sell you. They're trying to sell you a load of self-blame. If you have lost your job, if you've lost your home, if you're losing your business, it's your fault. Don't you dare blame the American government for the economic woes. Never mind that they justify taking taxes from you with this idea that they are controlling the economy. Oh, no. We're not responsible for the economic downturn. We had to spend all your money to fight carbon dioxide. And see, carbon dioxide is not a problem anymore. Therefore, your money was well spent. It's typical government doublespeak. So, the economy really is a disaster. We're in a depression. I'm not going to use the word recession anymore. It's pointless. We're in a depression. There are enough people out of work, enough people who've lost their homes, enough people who've lost their businesses. We are in a depression, and the government is playing make-believe. Make-believe that because we can loot enough money from the American people to prop up our good buddies down at Goldman Sachs, that everything is all hunky-dory. And we'll get the cute little bimbets on the corporate media news to get their pom-poms out and go, rah, the economy's doing fine. It's just nonsense. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs is out there with their computerized trading systems, which were banned back in the 1980s for almost wrecking the economy. And all of a sudden, Goldman Sachs and a couple of other key players are allowed to break the rules. They're allowed to use these. Most brokerages are not, and it gives them an incredible advantage. They can churn the stocks and generate fees, and they can just swap the stocks back and forth looking for that little tiny penny. They can artificially create demand and do the computerized version of a bump and dump. They can game the system. That's what they're doing. They're gaming the system. They're not making anything or producing anything of any value to anybody except to Goldman Sachs. They're gaming the system to loot it because all of that money that's going into Goldman Sachs, it does not come out of thin air, contrary to what Robert was saying. It's coming out of the value of the companies being traded. It is coming out of the pockets of the clients who are paying brokerage fees for all this churning. It's coming out of other places in the economy, and it is being collected into these few robber baron organizations. And the reason the government goes along with it, and we discovered this the hard way a year ago when TARP was being voted through, the U.S. members of the U.S. Congress are personally invested financially in these same companies. So, yeah, they're going to throw your tax dollars at these companies. They're throwing it into their own pocket indirectly. They're voting themselves richer on your back. The same thing with the reason for this constant push for war. Members of Congress have invested an estimated $190 million of their own money in defense contractor plants. If they can get a war going, they're going to be richer. And as long as it's not their kids being blown to bloody bits on the far side of the earth, they don't care. It's all about the money. It's all about the money. Meanwhile, we're beginning to see warning signs that helicopter Ben Bernanke is running those printing presses over at the Fed. Actually, they're at the Treasury, but they're run at the behest of the Federal Reserve, that they're pumping so much funny money into the banking system that the entire economy has been brought to the edge of collapse. We're already seeing over the last weekend where, do you remember last week we reported on how Russia and China and a bunch of other countries were starting to talk about how they were going to move away from the dollar in the oil as the oil currency? And then they came back and said, no, there are no such discussions because the value of the dollar took a major hit. And then the value of the dollar came back up. Now they're saying, yeah, we have been having these discussions. And we're going to do it slowly over the next few years, so there's no reason for anybody to panic. Then Iran came out and said they're dropping the dollar completely from their foreign exchange reserves. And we're seeing more and more companies. South America is dropping the use of the dollar. And they're coming up with their own international currency, the sucre. That they're going to use for cross-border trade. And they're not going to be using the dollar anymore. At some point, there's going to be a panic. Everybody's going to unload their dollars all at once, and that is going to be the final denouement. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we've got a caller waiting on the line who wants to talk about global government, and that's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. So we're going to be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die.
tonight. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go to Steve in Ontario. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing fine.
Interesting attempt at an interview there before.
Well, every once in a while we get them like that. You know, and you know what's kind of interesting here, because I know from our screener that you want to talk about global government, and the thing that occurred to me first and foremost is we're seeing basically three foundations on which they're trying to bring about public acceptance of global government. The first one was global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we, the United States of America, set 4,500 new records for cold and snow this last week. So don't give me this thing about global warming.
No, they wanted,
you know, in Copenhagen in December, they're going to have this new treaty, and all the nations are going to sign it saying, yes, we surrender control over key parts of our infrastructure to a global environmental authority. And then the second foundation for global government was the When Pigs Fly Flu. I mean, they're pushing this as hard. I got an email where confirmed swine flu deaths in Hawaii. Yeah, and it's still below the number of people starving to death, and nobody makes a big deal about that. And they're trying to talk about, well, the World Health Organization must have jurisdiction to come into countries and do what they think is nice. And the last one, and we saw this coming out last week, they're talking now about a global financial authority in order to manage the global financial meltdown. And, you know, that's why this idea that Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan want to look like criminals doesn't make any sense, because obviously their public image works against selling the economy as a reason to bring about global government. And so that's why that just absolutely does not make any sense. Plus, selling more globalism to fix a problem that globalism created, that's a hard one.
Okay, here's a slightly different spin then. I don't think that the average American looks at the financial problems as a global problem. They look at it as an American problem. They were American banks. They look at these big banks, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and all these other criminal enterprises, as American banks. So how is it then, how would you convince Americans to give up their American banking system willingly? It's the old problem reaction solution deal all over again. You create the problem, you wait for the reaction. Well, maybe the reaction wasn't strong enough from the criminal activities. Maybe they need a even stronger public reaction here, and where this other gentleman might have been going, and I don't necessarily agree with him, but here's the spin I got on it, is they need to look even worse, so that the Americans are so fed up with the banking system, it is so corrupt, that they must give it up in order to have a World Bank in place to oversee everything so that these criminals don't hand out bonuses anymore. I almost agree with what he's saying. It is so blatant.
Well, let me ask you a question, okay? Yeah. When the American people revolted and kicked out the British, and once we were done, did we stand around saying, okay, is there a bigger government we can be enslaved by now? Or did we say, let's set up and do our own thing here? Same thing with the French Revolution.
Yeah.
When they got rid of the royalty, did they stand around saying, okay, let's find a new monarchy to bring in and run our lives for us? The instinctive behavior of people when they throw off a system that is not working for them is to invent a system of their own to meet their own local immediate needs. I think anybody who thinks that bringing down the American banking system is going to convince anybody that a global financial authority is going to work, they're seriously deluded. They've been talking to the wrong focus groups.
Well, I think the people that are kind of trying to do this are seriously deluded. They are so full of themselves and so arrogant, they think they can pull anything over on the general public. And
Ceausescu made that same mistake.
Yes, you're right. These guys are lunatics. I mean, I can't reiterate it enough. They are lunatics at the top. They have no regard for us whatsoever on any level, and they will do whatever it takes to push forth their agenda. And their agenda is World Health Organization, World Global Environmental Tyrannicalism. I don't know if that's even a word.
That'll work, yeah.
And global banking. And how they're going to achieve global banking and get all these countries to willingly give up their banks. Like, we have banks in Canada here, too. We've been fighting off the Americans from coming in for the longest time. But how else would a country like Canada or the United States willingly convince its people that it's time for a new system other than making them look so bad and so corrupt in a blatant way that people would say, okay, we're done. These guys, we can't, our government can't control them. Let's put a new body in charge. That's kind of where I think he was going, and to some extent, I think that might be part of it, but I think you're right in the sense that it's going to backfire.
I don't think it's going to work. It's not going to work, simply because most people I'm talking to these days are saying they're ready to live without the banks completely. They look at the Federal Reserve and realize that banks exert power over the society by deliberately creating debt. Okay, and so the general sense I'm getting from all the people that I talk to and then write into the show and everything, they're saying they're ready to live without banks. They're ready to go to an alternative system of money that has value, where they can live their entire lives without ever needing to go to a bank, which was what we had set up in the United States 200 years ago. And here's the problem. If you have these major money center banks and Wall Street collapse from their own corruption, and then you say, well, let's come up with a world system, the first question is going to be, who are you going to get to run it?
Right.
Everybody we had that was a lord of finances screwed the pooch. We don't know anybody who can run the whole thing. So let's go back to small regional banks that serve their local communities and let these big giant behemoths follow the dinosaurs into the tar pits.
Yeah, but I agree. People want that. But yet they've willingly given up a certain amount of their freedom to a World Health Organization that is saying everyone should get a swine flu shot.
And well, I don't know how willing they're doing that. Most people around here are saying they're not going to get the shot. I'm not going to get the shot. My wife's not going to get the shot.
Well, I know.
There's something like 46-47% of Americans are saying that they think the shot is dangerous and they don't want a repeat of 1976.
It's not stopping the ads on TV and government's pushing it. And
yeah, but nobody's paying. Who listens to the government? Who listens to the government after Saddam's nuclear bombs? Who's listening to the government?
Well,
nobody watches. Now, listen.
Half the population has lost 20% of their IQ in the last generation, Mike. I mean,
that's from watching too much TV.
The generation is what you and I grew up in that could think for themselves. They look to government now for answers.
No, but actually, the latest surveys and statistics are showing that the majority of people interested in political information, the majority of those people are coming to the Internet to find out what's going on. That's why we see Salon Magazine out there saying that, you know, the truthers are mentally ill. They're going after Alex Jones. The corporate media is perpetually trying to portray the Internet as a haven of pedophiles, which is annoying the Catholic Church because that used to be their little image that they worked so hard to build. But the bottom line is people don't watch the TV news anymore. That's why they're trying to load it up with cute little bimbos and revealing skirts and the sexy weather girls and the rest of it. I mean, the bottom line is if you watch the corporate TV news, they maybe get the weather right and they maybe get the sports scores right. And other than that, it's just, you know, nobody really knows.
They don't even get the weather right anymore, man.
Yeah, that's true. But that's not their fault. I'm not going to hold them to blame for that one. But for the sports scores, if they mess that up, that's war right there.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. Have a good one. All right, we're coming to the end of the first hour here. Yeah, it is amazing. Very obviously, there is this push for a global agenda, and equally obviously, it is in serious, serious trouble. And this is the part that really worries me, because if Alex Jones is correct that the economies of the industrialized nations have been deliberately put on a path to collapse in order to clear them out of the way to make way for a new global government, and that global government cannot be created because of public awareness of it, and of course the problems that the United States and Israel themselves are creating for the credibility of a global government. We'll talk about that when we come back after the news break. If we get the collapse of the industrialized nations and there is no global government to replace it, we are looking at the start of a new dark ages. So, on that unhappy thought, we're going to stop here for commercials and a news break. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. So stay tuned and aloha, America.
We Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Hour number two of our program here on a Monday. And I want to follow up with the comment I made in closing on the last hour, which is right now the biggest problem that the globalists have is the credibility of a global government, because all of the efforts to sell the world a global government so far have centered around the United Nations. And the United Nations has a serious problem on its hand called Israel, which will not do anything that the United Nations requests of it, never has. Now we're embroiled in the situation where the United Nations Human Rights Council has basically endorsed the Goldstone Report of Israel's war crimes in Gaza. Israel is harumphing and screaming anti-Semite and throwing a tantrum and kicking and screaming the rest of it. And the United States government has already announced that they will, in fact, exercise their veto at the United Nations Security Council to block any further action on Israel's war crimes. So here's the point I'm trying to make. For global government to work, for it to appear to be an attractive option for the people of the world, it's got to be seen to govern. And if the United Nations cannot rein in Israel, if the United Nations cannot control the United States, then it is not credible as a global governing body, is the bottom line. It's just not going to work. It's a very interesting thing about Israel, and it has to do with Israel's membership in the United Nations, and what it is, alone among every other nation on Earth, Israel's membership in the UN was contingent. They actually wrote some conditions into the resolution that made Israel a member of the United Nations. And the conditions were Palestinians had an unqualified right of return. They were to be allowed back to the homes they had been driven from during the creation of Israel. That was one condition. The second one was if the Palestinians chose not to return to their homes, they had to be paid compensation for them. Those were the two conditions on which Israel became a member of the United Nations. Needless to say, Israel has not complied with either one. So here is my message to Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, who goes on and on and on about Iran's so-called international obligations, which is politics speak for they won't do what we tell them to do when we tell them to do it. Israel has international obligations. It's in black and white in the document that made them a member of the international community. And they are failing to hold to those obligations. Where is the outrage there? Where is the U.S. pressure there? There is no U.S. pressure. It's all political. Barack Obama basically came out and admitted that his only interest in peace talks between Israel and Palestine was to persuade other Arab nations in the region to get on board against Iran. If Obama didn't need those other nations, if he didn't need to trick them and fool them into thinking that he's an impartial peace broker between Israel and Palestine, he wouldn't care at all. I mean, Netanyahu came out yesterday and said the issue of the illegal settlements has been settled. And they started 30 of them today. Which is basically Israel's going to go on stealing land, and the U.S. has agreed to not pretend to be upset about it anymore. That's the accommodation. And, of course, we get that from a president who thinks that prosecuting Israel for war crimes is somehow going to get in the way of the peace process. I hold the other opinion. If you want peace, the very first thing you do is hang the war criminals. That's the necessary first step. All right, we've got callers building up on the line. Rob in Minnesota. Aloha, Rob. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I was from the first hour of the show, and I'm glad you get a two-hour show now. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
But anyway, the question that I'm kind of trying to formulate an idea on in my own head here is, was this a banker bailout or a banker payoff? As we know, during the first Bush administration, or Bush 1 presidency, the V8 moment was kind of the it's the economy, stupid.
Oh, that was Clinton's. That was Clinton's campaign speech.
Okay, but it had to do, you know, with the first Bush in office. And
yeah, during the SNL bailout, that happened. That happened on the on Bush Senior, and yeah, that was a major problem. And prior to the bailouts that we had last year, that was the largest bailout that we had seen in American history. Of course, now it's just small potatoes compared to what they did in the last year. But the bottom line is, back in the 1980s, I mean, it was already known we were losing our manufacturing. And more foreign investors were asking, why should we put our money in the United States? We're seeing less and less opportunities to actually generate real wealth. And so what President Bush said to these other trillionaires around the globe is, it's okay if you leave your money in the United States, invest in our banks and stuff, because if anything goes wrong, we will make the taxpayers cover all the losses. That's what the SNL bailouts of the 1980s was, a demonstration to foreign investors around the world that you could put your money in the United States, and even if the economy got into trouble, the taxpayers would be convinced to make good all the losses. Now, what you and I heard on the media is, we were saving these widows and orphans and retirees and these poor people who would be destitute without the Resolution Trust Corporation. In reality, 90% of the savings and loan accounts that were refilled with taxpayer dollars were numbered and brokered corporate accounts, many of them from foreign sources, many of them linked to the CIA's Iran-Contra gun and drug running operation. We got took. But they proved that they could make it work, and that is why, even as our manufacturing has declined and our trade imbalance has grown, foreign investors felt, okay, the U.S. is a safe place to put their money. And now it's being demonstrated again. They're putting their money into Wall Street. They're putting their money into these investment houses. And once again, the government is saying, we can trick or force or persuade the taxpayer to cover all your losses so you can leave your money here. And this is a very dangerous situation. I mean, never mind the fact that it's impoverishing the people. If there is a revolution in this country, all you got to do is have enough American people saying, no, we're not going to cover these bills anymore, and say it long enough and loud enough, and those foreign investors will pull their money out, and that the whole shebang is going to come down. A revolution.
Mike, you're going to have to send me some of that fine cone of coffee, or let me know what vitamins your wife's feeding you.
Oh, there's a green one, and there's a blue one, and there's this other one that's kind
of
black.
They're working good, though. It's hard to get a word in edgewise with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go ahead. You've got the floor.
Okay. Anyway, every president wants to have a good economy underneath him, and that's the lesson that Bush Senior administration didn't figure out. When Clinton came in, all of a sudden we had the so-called peace dividend, and they claimed that he balanced the budget and everything, and we know that was fancy bookkeeping. They just looted the Social Security and put it
that's
in the
true.
General budget. Now, but Clinton also did. He's the one that signed the NAFTA, and so there went all our high-paying manufacturing jobs. He left the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bush 2 comes in, Bush Jr. comes in, and they have to have a good economy, right? So how do you put, the pedal to the metal, so to speak? Well, they dropped the interest rates down, and they got everybody to pursue the quote-unquote American dream. I used to think that the American dream was you could be anything you wanted to be as long as you were willing to work for it. But they turned it into the American dream is to own your own home. And
mm-hmm.
So they got everybody out buying their own home. And not only were people buying homes at a record rate and building homes at a record rate, first of all, when people go out and they buy a home, they don't just buy a home. They buy the furniture that goes in, they buy the carpeting, they buy the appliances, they buy...
Hey, Rob, we're going to have to hold. We're hitting a commercial break. Stay on the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of the commercial and let you finish this thought, okay? Rick, I know you're holding on the phone. We'll get to you in the next segment as well. This is the What Really Happened radio show, and we will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And if you're wondering what that loud noise is that's out there, there's somebody with a helicopter keeps whizzing by very, very low altitude. There's supposed to be a floor there that they're not supposed to fly below unless it's an emergency or something like that. But this guy's up there just cowboying around, and who knows what he's doing. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Rob in Minnesota, you were talking about the American dream of buying a home. And basically, you know, we here in America, we don't actually own our own home. The government can come in at any time with eminent domain and take it away from us. We are sold the illusion of home ownership, for which we will pay a mortgage, a death pledge, to basically work for our entire lifetime in order to stay on this one place. And in a way, it's a very covert way of returning us to one of the primary principles of serfdom, which was the people were attached to the land. They weren't allowed to move around a huge amount. And in this case, once you've bought a mortgage, you're kind of rooted to that particular piece of property. Yes, you can travel, you can go on vacation and everything, and yes, people will sell their homes and move, but that's kind of a minority situation. It's a way of keeping population rooted to a place, to keep them predictable, to know that they're going to be there when you need to tax them or grab soldiers from them. And again, it is an illusion. And one of the things that we've noticed in the last couple of months, and then I'll shut up because I know it's your turn. One of the things that we've noticed in the last couple of months, they're always talking about the health of the economy in terms of the price of homes. And the higher the prices of the homes go, the more we are plunged into debt to pay for a place to live, the better they see the economy as being. I think that betrays a tremendous flaw in the prejudices of the economy, that more debt for the people is what's good for the economy, which certainly explains the way the government is spending it like crazy.
Just a side note here, I love listening to you because you really simulate a lot of thought, and I've never told you this. I've called in, you know, several times over the last couple of years, and I never told you how I first found you. And I was watching, I saw something.
Was I doing anything illegal?
No, this was a YouTube, commentary on a YouTube, and someone asked, who's Michael Rivera? And a reply to that question was, Mike is like Alex Jones, only he's for more the thinking people.
And so, I like that. I'll live with that one, yes.
Yeah, I said, well, who is this guy? I got to go find him. Anyway, back to my my thing of bailout or payoff. In order, you know, every president wants to have a good economy because that's what's going to get them reelected. And since all of the high-paying jobs were being exported out of the country because of the previous administration, the Bush administration's way to make it look like the economy was doing well was, you know, to have everybody out buying homes and buying new cars. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I look at the last 10 years, and if anybody should have been making money in the last 10 years, it should have been the big banks and the big automakers. Because not only were people, buying homes, I know a lot of people who have refinanced 4 and 5 times. Anytime
yes.
they refinance, it's another, you know, what, points, service, you know, the... So the banks are collecting.
Well, that's offset because one of the things they do is you know, after consumer debt was no longer tax deductible, what people would do is they'd go out, load up their credit cards, have a lot of fun, then they'd refinance their home and do a bill consolidation loan. And all of a sudden, what was interest that couldn't be taken off your income tax all of a sudden became interest that was deductible because now it was mortgage interest. And that's how they kind of offset. That's what made it worthwhile to refinance your house and do a bill consolidation loan. Even though technically you were getting higher points, they all became tax deductible. And that was one of the ways that people, you know, were basically, you know, sucking off the escalating equity on their homes. And it was basically like free money. But that only worked when the real estate.
But still, the banks were writing a lot of loans and, mm-hmm. you know, refinances. And so they should have been making a ton of money in the last 10 years. And so I think they know. I mean, these are, you know, it's not the local bank that's getting the banker bailout. It's you know, Goldman Sachs, it's J.P. Morgan, you know, it's the other big banks,
mm-hmm.
and these
mm-hmm.
are the guys that are on Wall Street, and they're the ones that, you know, know what's really going on. I mean, they're the ones that are writing the laws that, you know, Congress passes and, you know, and all that stuff. So they
we're seeing that with Geithner's kitchen cabinet, they like to call it now.
Yeah, and so they see the, you know, the writing on the wall. And what's that Ron Paul says, you know, the thing about inflation is it's a progressive tax that hurts the little people the most because the people that get the money first, you know, they can spend it first, and that's when money still has real value. And so they printed all this money out, up, and they're handing it out as bonuses to these bankers because these bankers know what's going to happen. We're headed for a deep depression, and people aren't going to be buying, you know, buying homes anymore. And so they want these bonuses up front. You know, I'd almost call it hush money. It's a payoff. These guys are getting paid off.
Oh, well, if you're going to sell off your fellow American citizen into a lifetime of utter poverty, you know, you better get some cash for that.
That's,
you know, that kind of thing
right.
takes
and that's why
a high paying job there.
Do the cremation of care thing. You know, they don't want to have a conscience. They don't want to think about it.
That's why sociopaths do so well in government.
Anyway, that's my theory, and I don't know what you think about it, but I'll let you get on to your next caller. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, yeah, and yeah, let me get on to the next caller, and I'll come back and talk about this toward the end of the show here. We're going to switch over here to Rick in Kansas. Rick, are you still there?
Yep.
Fantastic. Thank you for staying with us, and what's on your mind tonight?
Well, the first thing is the one caller said that the banks might be purposely going down so that they can create a central world bank. Well, that wouldn't work because then our trust in banks would go down if they intentionally did that, and we wouldn't trust them.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
that's an excellent point.
And the banks right now, I can't remember if it's the reserves or just all their money, but they have 62% of either the reserves or all their money in foreign currency.
Mm-hmm.
So they know something's coming up. And then one last point I wanted to get onto is Social Security are not going to get the cost of living increase, but they're going to give them a $250 stimulus check, which actually is saying we know we're lying and that your cost of living is going up. I mean, it's a bold lie.
Yeah, it is, and the $250, you know, in this economy, that's not, it's really not much of anything at all for these people on the fixed income, because the bottom line is, you know, the government is saying, you know, they don't get a cost of living adjustment because the cost of living is going down. Maybe through various creative bookkeeping, you can make it look like that now because of the price of real estate, and housing, but we're going into what is turning out to be a very harsh winter, and we know that oil and gas prices are going to be going up. We know that food prices are going up as we get into the spring, and the wheat shortage begins to make itself felt. So, you know, it's, you know, the old people are getting messed with, and I don't like it, and I'm sure they don't either. And so hang on to the phone, Rick. We're going to keep you over the commercial break. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show, and we're going to go right back here to Rick in Kansas. And Rick, we were just talking. Well, can you just pick up where you left off?
Well, I think I made all my points about the cost of living increase, but I wanted your thoughts on the banks getting out of the American currency, and that's all I have.
Well, there's no secret to the fact that the large money center banks in the United States do not use Federal Reserve notes to settle their own accounts with each other. They use gold bullion. The Federal Reserve note is just for us peones to be using here. As far as keeping foreign currencies, yeah, right now I think any money center bank is going to be doing that. What you need to understand, you were talking before about this idea about the banks, you know, we're just writing all these mortgages. You need to understand that your neighborhood bank doesn't have any money. They're just loan brokerages. They don't actually have a lot of money in their own vault. They have basically enough to cover their cash needs day to day as people come in and cash checks and things like that. But as far as the mortgages are concerned, they will basically sign a mortgage agreement and type the money into your account to pay that. And if they need cash reserves to cover that, they go to the next higher bank on the tree all the way up to the top, which is the Federal Reserve System. And it's all just a gigantic legalized counterfeiting system. The money does not exist until you sign that loan agreement, and the bank's entire wealth and profitability and power rests on debt. And the more debt they can create, the more powerful and richer the banks become. There was a movie out a little while ago called The Independent, and it's about an investigation. This investigator is checking into this bank that is caught running weapons. And he's and there's this wonderful scene in the middle where he says, why is a bank involved in gun running? And the guy on the inside of the bank says, we're starting a war. And the guy says, why are you doing that? He says, because it creates debt. We don't even care which side wins. Both sides go into debt in a war. And debt is what gives the bank its power and its wealth. This whole process of bailouts over the last year at the hands of the U.S. government was plunging the American people deeper and deeper into debt in order to float the banks along. Because as the economy faltered and we started losing our jobs to these places overseas and whatnot, and things started to default, people stopped borrowing new money. And the problem with the Federal Reserve System, it is a pyramid scam. Just like Bernie Madoff's, only it's a little bit larger. And the reason is, when that first Federal Reserve note goes into circulation, more money is owed to the bank than is actually in existence. And the only way the old loans can be paid off in full with their accumulated interest is for new loans to be created to justify printing new money with which to pay the interest on the old money. That's why they're always talking about the growth of the economy. The economy must grow so that new money is created to pay the interest on the old money. If the economy stops growing, if it just stays still, it starts falling apart because that accumulating interest, the money to pay it, doesn't actually exist anywhere. That is the downfall of a compound interest banking system. And that is why... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, is has any of the credit unions gone belly up like the banks?
I don't know, but they're not covered by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, so it's kind of hard to, I'll look into it. I don't think so, because it's more of a cooperative. Again, ultimately the problem is that the Federal Reserve System itself, the entire system of banking that we call Western-style banking, it is a pyramid scheme. And it brings tremendous wealth to the people at the top, like any other pyramid scheme, and when it all comes apart, you know, everybody at the bottom will suffer and just be in total misery. And it happens over and over and over again because nobody since Kennedy has the gonadal tissue to say to these guys, you got to cut it out. You've made enough money off of this. Let's knock it off before we bring the entire system crashing down. But, you know, greed is a sickness, and money with lots of zeros behind it becomes an addiction. And it doesn't matter how much they got to have more.
Thank you, Mike.
You got it. All right, thanks an awful lot, Rick. So at some point in the very near future, there's going to be an intervention. When they did it in France, when they intervened in the money addicts in France, they had to intervene using a guillotine. Whether or not that'll happen again this time, I don't know. But certainly I can understand why that's going to happen. All right, now, getting back to the situation with Israel, because this is really getting ugly. Our corporate media is still not wanting to deal with this issue of war crimes committed by Israel. In fact, if you were listening on the news break before the show, they're still going on and on about this stupid UFO-shaped helium balloon in Colorado. And was the kid on it or not? No, he wasn't. It was a hoax. Get over it. It was a hoax. So... they're still going on and on about it. Why? Because they don't want to have to report that the United Nations Human Rights Council endorsed the Goldstone Report on Israel's war crimes in Gaza. It is on its way to the United Nations Security Council. Now, Barack Obama's already announced they're going to pull the plug on it. They're going to veto it. Their rationale for announcing it is saying, look, we're going to block it anyway, so there's no reason to debate it. Don't waste the Security Council's time. It's a complete waste of time because we're going to block it. Let's go on and do other business that we will allow to move forward. And by doing this, of course, if there are, in fact, war crimes involved, and it certainly seems to be the case, for the United States to veto this report means the United States is an accessory to those war crimes, which is not surprising considering the United States government has been torturing people for confessions and various other human rights violations. And so as a result, the American media is trying to basically turn a blind eye to this story, because it's going to be a severe embarrassment for the U.S. to get up and be an accessory after the fact to Israel's war crimes at the United Nations. They're hoping they can let it go by and you won't notice. There'll be something else to keep you distracted with. Something else out there. All right, we're going to go to the phones again. Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello there, Mike. I just got a short comment here, and it might shed a little light on this cost of living thing for people on fixed incomes, senior citizens, Social Security. I'm retired from federal civil service. Mine's tied to theirs, so I don't get a raise either. And but they may not give me the 250 either. I don't know what they consider me. So, but you know.
Well, after you called into this show, they consider you an enemy combatant. So you know you're probably not going to get a check.
I've been on their list for a long time. You know that,
okay.
Mike.
Yes, I know that.
Or you suspect that.
Yeah.
But what it is, you know.
Actually, am I in trouble talking to you?
Ricky, do those numbers. I follow that because it pertains to me too, personally. And I read all the federal digests and government publications and all that. Here is what they do when they do that ECI, they call it. I think that's what they call it. And they've changed it over the years. They didn't start doing this till 1974 or 5, somewhere thereabouts, giving an automatic raise. It was up to Congress every year. And they wanted to take the politics out because then they could, they might have been given too much, you know, on the generous side, by grandstanding, you know, we can buy votes that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they just decided to put it on automatic pilot. That way they don't have to deal with it. And plus, whatever raise we get or it comes out, they get automatically too, so they don't have to be in a tussle over voting their own raise.
Correct.
And then going back and explaining that to their constituents who might be put out about that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, well, we get it's automatic. We didn't have anything to do with it, you know. That's the law. Well, in the they take a, what they call a market basket of items, and this is
yes.
done by the Labor Department, statistical Bureau of the Labor Department, and naturally they go over a range of things that consumers buy, everything from housing to cars to Monopoly games or whatever.
Okay, we got to take a break here, Clarence. You know, when we come back from the commercials, got to wrap it up because we're going to be in the last segment of our show and we need to get to the point here. So this is the What Really Happened Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero, and we will be right back after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just scratch yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here today. And before we get back to our caller here, in response to the question from a previous caller, to date here, this year, 2009, 99 banks have failed, along with 14 credit unions. So yes, credit unions are failing nowhere near as fast as the banks because they are, by and large, not federally insured, and they also tend to be smaller institutions. They're not getting the news coverage that the banks are. But yes, credit unions are at risk. So sad to say, but that's the truth. All right, getting back here to Clarence in Oklahoma, and we're talking about this calculation of a cost of living adjustment. Basically, in a nutshell, it's another one of these government situations where they'll take a bunch of numbers on a bunch of assumptions, and they'll run them through a whole bunch of algorithms and calculations and stuff, and it spits out a number that's supposed to have a meaning. But we've been seeing lately that their unemployment numbers are very inaccurate. They're finally admitting that this offset correction they put in there for birth-death ratio and all this other magic statistical stuff, you know, as opposed to just going out and saying, whoever doesn't have a job, raise your hand, and counting them, those numbers are very inaccurate and subject to bias and propagandizing and spin to try and convince us things aren't all that bad and that we shouldn't tar and feather the miscreants.
Well, you know, and that's exactly true. That just gave me another thought. I'm trying to keep this brief, but I'm retired, as I said before, and they don't count me in the statistics. No, period.
That's even right,
still,
they don't.
Even though I might want to go out and get a job, I'm still not counted. So I guess you can't account for intent, you know, so whatever. What they do is when they run all those statistics through that little crunching machine. Yeah, I believe it's that basic, garbage in, garbage out type deal.
Exactly.
And
the same one they use to predict that the Earth is getting warmer.
Oh, yes, exactly. Well, what they do, the two major things, and this is what I blame it on the most, and this is the point. They leave out food and fuel.
Yes.
They claim that that those two commodities are too volatile to get a good reading on.
Mm-hmm.
That's their story. As if I don't buy food and fuel.
Or that it's just going to average itself out over time. And certainly that is not
think.
The case going into this very hard winter, and especially with the spring wheat forecasts way, way off. I mean, you know.
So they leave that out. And one more quick thing, a statistics thing, just briefly. That explains why the casualties in our two wars that we're in right now are undercounted. Someone mentioned something I didn't realize, but think about all the Blackwater and all the mercenaries. They don't count them.
No, they don't.
That most of them are retired or ex-military, and they're doing
the same job. The contractors don't get counted. The contractors don't get counted. The civilian employees, when they
get
killed,
counted.
They're not counted. And there's another little scam that they do because of the battlefield medicine being as good as it is. Kids who are getting shot are still alive when they're taken off the battlefield, so they're not counted as killed in action. They may die later at the hospital,
right.
And they go on a different list of people who've died. You know, and what I'm hearing anecdotally, I'm trying to find confirmation, but the families of these people, these kids who are being killed in these wars, are being told that if they speak out, if they talk to reporters, if they go online, if they do any of that stuff, that they'll lose the financial benefit, you know, checks that they're getting because of the person who was killed in action.
That wouldn't surprise me. Well, with that, I'll let you go, Mike.
All right. Thanks an awful lot, Clarence. And, yeah, it's a real mess out there. And the bottom line here is I think the government is basically shorting our retirees and people on a fixed income. They're saying you're not going to get a cost of living adjustment because we can't see the cost of living is going up, but we're going to give you $250 anyway, which is, you know, bupkis. And the problem here, we're going into a very, very hard winter. We know that fuel prices are going up. We know that food prices are going up. And as Clarence said, those aren't calculated in the cost of living adjustment. Plus, it's just an ugly, ugly situation out there. Everything that you're buying at the store, because it's imported, it's going up in price because the dollar is in decline. And we're going to have a lot of very hungry and very cold elderly people who are going to be saying, is this what I get after a lifetime of paying into the system? Is this the best they can do for us? And the government's going to say, hey, we gave you a $250 check. You're not allowed to complain from that. Anyway, moving along. Boy, I had a lot more stuff I wanted to talk about. Obama's stepping up the drone bombings, the remote-controlled killing machines just in Afghanistan and Pakistan, despite the civilian deaths. It's considered an acceptable collateral damage. Meanwhile, we're getting reports from Afghanistan that both the U.S. and British troops are having a huge morale crisis. They're demoralized. They understand. They have come to understand. They're over there guarding oil pipeline rights of way and opium poppy fields. and they understand this is not a war they can believe in. It's certainly not a war they want to die in. They're tired. They're sick. They want to come home. Huge morale crisis over there. And, of course, all these extended service deployments are not helping matters either. Now, over the weekend, there was a bombing inside Iran. It's being attributed as a suicide bombing by a group called the Jundullah Terror Group. It turns out, and we've got this reported from several sources now, that this Jundullah Terror Group is funded and presumably controlled by the American Central Intelligence Agency. They're one of the opposition groups the U.S. has created and funded inside Iran to try and bring the government down. Remember during Iran's elections, and they were out there and screaming there had to be vote fraud, and they were sent millions and millions of dollars to Iran's opposition groups to try and bring down the government. That didn't work out. Have you noticed there's this weird double standard going on? Because in Iran's elections, Ahmadinejad was leading in the pre-election polls, he was leading in the exit polls, and he won by the same amount in the final result, which is generally considered a sign of an honest election. Now we're up here in Afghanistan, where Hamid Karzai, His Excellency from UNOCAL, was way behind in the pre-election polls, way behind in the exit polls, and somehow magically won. And yet the American government and the media didn't say anything at all about possible vote fraud. The UN has gone in there and said there was enough vote fraud where Karzai has to go through a runoff election with his nearest competitor. He's not very happy about that. But there's an interesting double standard between, you know, the U.S. government said nothing about the obvious heavy-handed vote fraud by Hamid Karzai while trying to create the illusion that Ahmadinejad had to be cheating because he's not the guy that the U.S. wanted to have win. And another double standard. Did you notice how heroic the tweeters, the people using tweet, the microblogging system, when they were in Iran and they were sending out all this information that supported this idea that the Iranian people wanted to get rid of their democratically elected government and go back to the Shah and all this other stuff, and how these supposed inside Iran Twitterers were held up as heroes of the modern internet age. And yet, at the G20 protests here in the United States, when protesters were using Twitter to organize themselves, all of a sudden it's a huge crisis, and we've got to crack down and not allow American citizens to be using tweets to organize their protests against the government. Do you see the double standard out there? You've got to keep an eye out for it, because that is generally the giveaway when the government is basically shoveling a load of bovine excrement at you. When it's heroic when these people do it and bad when the exact same thing is being done by this group over here, you got to ask yourself, why? What's different? Well, obviously, the U.S. government does not like Ahmadinejad. They're trying to create a case for war in there. They were trying to overthrow the government. It was attempted to repeat the 1953 overthrow of Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh and the imposition of the Shah. I think the biggest mistake they made this last year when they tried to restage the coup was handing out the flag of the Shah to all the protesters at all these staged protests they had all over the place. But again, it's a double standard. Ahmadinejad's election was fair. Our media kept trying to claim it was crooked. Afghanistan's election is provably crooked and fraudulent. The United Nations has just gone in and said exactly the same thing. Our media wouldn't touch the story at all. Iranian Twitterers are good. American Twitterers are bad. You see the pattern that's evolving here. Got to keep an eye on it. All right, that's the end of our show today, and I got to head on out of here and get some other work done. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. Central here on the Genesis Communication Network. So until then, stay safe, stay skeptical, stay angry, stay informed. Share what you know, please, especially about Israel's war crimes in Gaza. Get it out there. The corporate media wants to prove they can still brainwash the American people. Only you can prove them wrong. Aloha, America.
It's no secret that Genesis Communications Network depends on listeners like you. Now you can do even more to hear Genesis shows in your area. Simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN programs. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local stations and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com or call 877-807-4048. Call today.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.